Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Welcome to City Alpha 3, Star Trek podcast, the Nerd Party's dedicated Star Trek show here on the network, at least for all things Star Trek Discovery Review. I'm joined by Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. Gentlemen, has this week been a good time for you?
Jeez. Has it only been a week? It feels so much longer since last Thursday when we saw this episode.
I saw it twice, so yeah.
Which time was the better one?
I'll save that for later, and then we'll get into it.
I mean, did seeing it a second time really crystallize really what was going on? All right. Well, of course, the Nerd Party just doesn't have one Star Trek show. We actually have Punch It, of course, and help joining us this week to talk all things Star Trek Discovery for this week is Charlene Schmidt. Charlene, how are you doing?
I am well. Thank you very much, and it's good to be back.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it makes me think of Jet Reno. I mean, you were in our first Discovery Season 2 episode, Char, and just like Jet Reno, now you're back after a long hiatus.
I'm back because I have a bitch of a hangnail.
And I have a beard. It all comes together. So, of course, we'll be talking about Through the Valley of Shadows, episode 12 here of season 2, as we do the countdown to the conclusion of the second season of Star Trek Discovery, which will answer all your questions and make us wanting more for season 3, already approved, coming to CBS All Access. So, let's just do opening thoughts. Char, you're the guest. You know, we haven't talked to you in a while. So, you know, I don't know how you've been feeling for the whole Red Angels, Seven Signals, everything else for the past time with we talked to you, but sort of what'd you think, or what were you expecting, if anything, going into this episode, and then generally what'd you think of this episode?
It really has been a while, hasn't it? Oh, man, yeah, we've been through quite a ride. My only hope for the Red Angel thing the whole time was that it wasn't Michael, so when we got to that episode where they reveal in the teaser, oh, guess what? It's Michael. I'm like, are you kidding me? I fell for that hook, line, and sinker, and I was so disappointed. And then, of course, we get the nice twist at the end. It's not Michael. It's her mother. I thought, okay. We're back now. We're good. It's been a lot of ups and downs. There's been a lot of times when I have not been really sure how I really feel, what I'm really thinking about where things are going, and I'm just like, hold on. Give it a couple more weeks. Let this play out. Let's see what happens. Give it a freaking chance. Because my knee-jerk reaction is always just like, what? Huh? And so I have to take that step back and breathe a little bit because, unfortunately, Star Trek does not breathe a little bit, not Discovery. And so that's probably been one of my biggest critiques of this season is that it's been so jam-packed. They're doing so much that, frankly, it's a little hard to keep up. So when we actually get some heartfelt moments, like when Culber's talking to Admiral Cornwell, and we're actually getting some real processing of some of the crap that's gone down, I'm thrilled. I want so much more of that. So coming to where we are now with just, what, a couple of episodes left of the season, I'm ready for answers. How about you guys?
Yes, and I believe we will have two episodes worth to get them, if my math is correct. Because you know,
I don't know. I mean, how many signals are left, Philip? We got to cram
right?
those in.
Yes.
Yeah, but only two episodes. That means we have to do at least one or two in the next episode.
Now,
that's
Daniel,
why we have time crystals.
Now, Daniel, I know everyone's favorite.
Is that why, Char? Is that why?
That's my theory.
Now,
we're gonna timey-wimey spore drive it all.
Now, Daniel, everyone knows your favorite quote is, I love math. And so with only two episodes left, what'd you think of Through the Valley of Shadows?
Yeah, you know, it's...
All right, Darren, what do you think of the episode, other than lots of sighs and eye-rolling?
I mean, it had some cool moments. I think once we were down on, was it Borath?
Yes.
Borath.
Monastery. That was
the time
really cool.
Crystal, I mean, planet.
Yeah, I think all the stuff they did down there was really interesting because it was new. We saw the D7 show up in all its glory, which was pretty cool.
That was cool.
I mean, they built that pretty fast. And I was really glad to see Jet Reno back because I really like her. She's an awesome character. She's kind of got a little dash of Guinan in her, a little bit of sass. Like, I'm going to, you know, basically she had tennis elbow, but it was instead a hangnail. I mean, it's basically the same thing as what we got when she was talking to Culber. But
you mean the character whose name rhymes with poo?
Yeah. But overall, it's weird because I don't feel this is where I thought we'd be with two episodes left, because it's like, okay, is that it, so much of our goal was spent trying to find out who the Red Angel was, and there was almost really no Red Angel at all in this one because apparently we're done with that chapter. But and it was kind of cool to see you know, Michael react to the Shenzo crewman who was the what is it called? Section 31 agent / AI.
Control.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, the only downside I kind of feel with that is I feel like the rules for the AI control are fast and loose, whereas I think that should be something that's more defined. So it's like, okay, like I can understand if it was, what's his name? The
Leland.
I can understand if it's just Leland, but all of a sudden these nanobots are like transmitting over the air and they infect a ship and then they infect a person. Like, it's like, okay, I guess that's possible, but I don't know. It felt very much like kind of out of nowhere, but by everyone smiles, I'm sure we're going to talk about that.
Well, and Daniel, of course, I was just kidding, playing over you. But I figure for this episode, I'm just going to do something crazy. I'm going to go sort of in reverse priority order. So this episode, I believe, don't quote me, but I'm 99% sure this is the writing team for the Section 31 show. Or, you know, it's Boo, and I forget her writing partner. But it's the two people who are going to be the showrunners for Section 31 show. But anyway, so who wrote this episode? But anyway, this actually did have, not that you always have to have it, but has an A, B, and a C. So I thought we'd go CBA. That way we can just sort of get things out of the way. So, Daniel, the C story was the, as we've sort of talked about before, Jet and Dr. Culber. So, which I predicted is only ever going to be a C story, unfortunately. But anyway, what'd you think of their talk mentions? You know, I think it was about two scenes, which I guess is however much a C story gets. But
sorry, this was written by Bo Kim and Erica Lippold.
Yeah, and I believe those are the Section 31 showrunners. So, but anyway, so what'd you think, Daniel?
You know, I thought it's interesting. Everybody's talking about having Engineer Lady back, and I like her. But in the first scene in the C plot, she comes off as super callous and like mean spirited almost. Like, she's like, oh, you haven't gotten over that yet. And then in the next scene, she goes and tries to patch things up with Culber. So I was like kind of confused at her motivation. Like, she's like, I need my engineer buddy 100%, but we don't see, like, I guess he's sad a little bit, but he still seems to be doing his job just fine. I don't know. It feels like they're pushing this character motivation stuff without letting it flow, without letting it come from the characters. And I don't know, maybe they only had her for the day or something. But but I guess they get to play that word game with the Saurian guy. So that was
Linus.
Linus. Linus is the best. Bamboo boy.
Bamboo boy, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was, because it's actually again, I don't mean this in a negative way, it's a sitcom trope, because she actually has terrible motivations. She's not, you know, I'm going to go, you know, these are my friends. Because, you know, she had her little Stamets moment a couple episodes back. You know, so they're like frenemies or something. But, you know, she's like, oh, in order to get him working, let me go make his boyfriend fall in love with him again. And I'm going to go pretend to be sweet. You know, and that's like, okay, well, okay. So it's like, I don't know how much to trust her, you know. She's sort of an unreliable narrator, as we say in the business. You know, it's like, I don't know what you're coming from. And then she sort of unlocks the, you know, the fellow LGBT card. So it's like, oh, you know, we're cool, right? Right? Okay, now go make out with your boyfriend so I can get to work here. So,
although he obviously was working well enough to fix the spore drive because they spore drive jumped in this episode.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and she even acknowledges that. You should be proud. You should be happy. We spore jumped again. And he's just like, no, not really. I've not saved the world yet, so things are not cool. It's not okay. I had a kind of a mixed reaction with the whole Jet Reno thing. For one, yes, it was awesome to see her again. I love Jet freaking Reno. I want to see Tig Notaro in every episode. Her scene with Culber, it was enjoyable, but I do have a little bit of a bone to pick with it. I really appreciated her relating to Culber on a personal level, sharing a bit of her past, relate to him. That's cool. Because I think what happened with her and Stamets in the mess hall was she realized just how much crap these two are really working through. Like, they are not getting over it. And it has been some time, but this is a slow process. And so I feel like she's trying to jumpstart it. And even though I think it was well-intentioned, and I think she was just trying to put the bug in Culber's ear to not give up on Stamets, it came across as a bit pushy, and I didn't appreciate that.
Yeah, because, again, you mentioned, Char, how Discovery doesn't breathe. How long has it really been since he came back from the dead? 2 weeks? I mean, like...
A month at most?
Like, they said a few weeks since Culber moved out of their quarters.
Right, so...
Yeah, and her first line is, oh, we're still doing this? And it's like, his...
Like, dude!
He just came back from the dead and then left him. Like, what do you mean we're still doing this? This is ridiculous.
Like, no big deal? Really? Oh, come on. Because you have all been through so much dang trauma. It really is a miracle there were not ships on... or counselors aboard the ships until the 24th century.
I mean, she's over being stranded for a year. I mean, if you can't get over being back from the dead, walk it off, buddy.
I guess some people are more resilient than others. We can't acknowledge that.
That's right. Yeah, and I've always been on record. I love Culber. And I realize the guy works out a lot. I would love for him not to look like he's straining a muscle or veins in his face. Like, I feel like he's like doing dead weights as he does a scene. I'm just like, Lord, just relax, buddy. And the Stamets, I've warmed up to Stamets sort of over time. But I don't understand what Culber is going through. But I mean, like, literally. So, like, just to say, like, oh, he has PTSD. Well, what does that mean? I mean, is he having bad dreams? Does he have an identity crisis? I mean, just, like, he feels bad. That doesn't tell me what he's going through.
Right. One therapy session alone is not going to fix that up. He's not okay.
Yeah, I just feel like the broad brush, because they never said PTSD, but I think that's sort of the fan is like, PTSD, well, that's not like what exactly, you know? Yeah, I think we have to be a little more specific and what, you know, just to make it A, more interesting and to get details so we can know, you know, and for the actor to know what to show or what to do, you know, but I don't know.
Right, some of those smaller details, Discovery really does gloss over a lot of that stuff that I think really would be useful to us, both in terms of as an audience, but also for these characters to show what they are working through and if they are working through or not. Because they're telling us, not showing us.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. And Darren mentioned it earlier when he said that they were playing fast and loose with the rules. And like, that is Discovery's MO. That's what, I mean, we do this every week. This is the same frustrations, is the fact that they don't care about how and why things happen. They just need things to happen in sequence. Bam,
right,
we're going to have
this
and this
there.
And this and this. I don't care how, you know, the time crystals work. Just time crystal. Just keep saying time crystal, and that will explain everything. And then, so when things like this happen, when you're doing with like personal character motivations, it matters. The little bits and the details and like the motivations are what drive the story and what like make it interesting to watch. So if we don't get that, it's more an exercise in frustration than anything.
You know what's really weird? I just had a thought. It doesn't feel like the May episodes were this season. Don't they feel like they were literally like last season? It feels like so long ago.
I don't think Tilly was even in this episode.
she was right, in the scene.
In the mess.
Right, but I'm just saying, if it's like, okay, we did all of that, and, but why? Like, I mean, okay, last season it was all about Spore Drive and how, and we got a lot about how it worked and a lot of the idiosyncrasies of it and the problems that you can have of it. I would have liked to see that with the time suit, like have more of that, maybe put more of who the Red Angel is on the front end or something like that. And then the rest of them is them trying to like backward engineer it or something. I don't know. It's just, I'm
like, yeah. You want them to rein it in a little bit, really understand what these massive story points are all about. What can we do with them? Are they vulnerable? I mean, can they, in the same way that we have Genesis in the TOS movies, I mean, can they be perverted into a weapon, as Dr. Marcus said?
Right. Well, if you read the comics and novels, it will explain everything. Quick question, Darren. Were you surprised to learn that Reno was a widow?
I wouldn't say I was surprised. It was more like, it was just an interesting way to go about it of like, oh, look, here's a shot of her finger. You see the ring. Oh, we're going to talk about that now. Oh, okay. And now, end scene. Like, I honestly never expect this to ever come up again, ever.
Now we all have to rewatch and see if she's been wearing that ring the whole time. Of course, here's my question, right?
Well, it looked like it was on, like, the pointer finger and it was farther down. It was way subtle. It almost looked like a tattoo.
Oh, well, I can pause. Don't worry. But here's my question. So, am I right? She was stranded for a year on the planet?
Yeah.
So when did she find out her wife died?
I don't know. You know what?
So
been interesting,
she could have
is...
found out before or after. I see what you're saying.
Right.
Well, if
was
it's after,
that same ship, maybe?
I have questions because she's only known that for a month.
That's true. And then, so is she working through some crap? It had to have been while she was stranded. Was her wife aboard the same ship? Even
you know, that'd be interesting.
Now that could have been a serious
thing. I think that'd be more
thing.
Powerful. It's. I mean, the way she. I mean, and I don't know is the answer, Char. So you're right. You could be right. I mean, when you say she died in the Klingon War, not like she died when we crashed. You know what I'm saying? But you could be right.
I get the feeling I would put money on before she got stranded for a year. Because
how long has the war been?
I don't know. It was hard when our crew goes to another universe halfway through it and then jumps back 9 months later.
Oh, that's true. Wait, how far did the time jump?
They were 9 months into the future when they jumped before, plus all the time that we'd have of the war up to then,
so
which
from,
had been a while, so at least a year.
So from Battle to Binary to Laurel, the
you
chancellorship.
Know, if
is the...
only we got star dates in the beginning of these episodes.
That's true. Those are noticeably not around.
Because then that means, and again, I know I'm sorry I'm doing it, but that means, you know, assuming, and I would assume... maybe stupidly, that she, and I agree, that she would find that the wife died before Reno got stranded. But that means it's still a short period. I mean, it could have only been a couple months, you know, if you've been a year.
Okay, so
oh God, here
Battle the Binary Stars, it says stardate 12.1207.3. And then the end of it, would that would be known as the very end, right?
Yeah, I mean, the last episode of season
well,
one.
It says unknown, so if we go back to what's past as prologue, that's the last one I have a start date on. That's when they're in the mirror universe.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
That is saying to be 1834. I don't know. It's start dates. They're really weird.
But anyway,
it's all made up and it doesn't matter.
Just like the points in Whose Line Is Anyway.
Exactly.
So, like, assuming that it was before she got stranded, that means fairly recent event, right? You know, everyone mourns in their own way, pretty much. But that means she was mourning while she was stranded. So she doubled traumatized.
Seriously.
But, apparently a month later, she's fine, guys. She's fine. Okay. Well, that's enough of that. Let's go to the B story. And that's, in my opinion, that would be the sort of Burnham Section 1 and Spock story. I mean, that's, I don't know, I thought that was the B story. A and B are very close, in, you know, but that's what I'm calling the B story. So, Char, what'd you think of Life Aboard Section 31 ship with the Burnham Spock buddy comedy?
So, first off, I love how Saru's approach to this whole thing got the party started. He approves Burnham's request, like, yeah, go do the thing, that's cool. But then without her knowledge, he sends Spock to go along, because why would you send one person on a very potentially dangerous situation? I mean, it could be nothing. It could be every freaking thing, and she could easily have gotten herself, for lack of a better term, assimilated. So it was good that he had the thoughtfulness to send Spock with her. That was fantastic, and it just shows so much why Saru is ready for the center seat. He needs to be there. So I don't know. I'm really ready for that to happen, because we know that Pike is up at the end of this season. Saru needs to take the chair. It's rightfully his. So all of that said, now with the Section 31, this has probably been like kind of the story point that I've had the most trouble with in Discovery. I really don't know how much I like it. I don't really know where it's going. And with the artificial intelligence, my worry is the same as I think a lot of people's, is like, is this the Borg or isn't it? Is it like the predecessor to the Borg? I just want to kind of see how this plays out before making any judgments. But I really don't want them to go for the Borg. That is my wish, because it's been so done. Can we not go there? But I need definitive proof that that is not happening. So we'll just see.
The fact that they keep using, like, I got that it happened once, the eye thing, because that was the random Leland whatever. Mm-hmm. But they keep doing the eye thing, and I'm like, it kind of speaks to, like, Locutus in First Contact, you know? Right. So I'm like, okay, is that the only way to do it?
They're deliberately giving us echoes of the Borg, like the eye thing, and then when, Gant, when he starts talking in sort of like that monotone, mechanical voice, he's talking like a freaking Borg. I'm sorry, that's way too close for comfort.
You have the nanites that are all swarming over towards Michael. I mean, right. What other technology uses, no other species uses that but the Borg?
Right. So really, I mean, I think the one cool thing I think we're getting out of this so far anyway is that the whole thing, if every ship right now at the very end of this episode is infected with control, this would explain why Section 31 went dormant for so long, maybe just completely out of the picture for a long time until the 24th century. That does explain that. So cool, because this is not a good situation.
They just vacuum sealed all the Section 31 agents in the 23rd century.
Right. Didn't happen. Mm-mm. Wash our hands clean.
Though I did it. And again, it doesn't matter, but I think about these things. So with Gant, and I know he was taken over, but assume for the moment, which is an assumption, that before we knew he was AI, everything he said is true, in as much as his background. So in other words, he's saying, you know, Shenzhou, the Battle of the Binary Star kind of left me, whatever, and so I joined 31. But, like, is that how they recruit? Like, is it just, like, Section 31 posters, like, come join 31, help save the... I'm like, not a very secret organization. I thought they, like, showed up in your bedroom at night and turned on the lamp and be like, and then put a bag over your head and, you know, fraternity haste you or something. Yeah.
It does seem like this incarnation of Section 31 was not very secret. It seems more like an elite organization.
Mm-hmm.
Not a secret organization. It becomes secret in the 24th century because I think a lot of people would find that disturbing. And maybe it's related to all of this. Now, did you guys trust Gant for a freaking second? Because that is what sort of ruined this whole thing for me.
I think a little bit.
I mean, I did.
You seem like a wuss.
I guess.
But.
I trusted him mostly just because it seemed like a really long play for him to be the one who's infected and he's out in space. Like, he wasn't the only crewman who was still on the ship. He was the only one who had slight life signs. So if their plan was to get discovered, it seemed like a long shot.
I mean, his story had a few holes, but I assume that was just the bad writing I've expected from Discovery. So it was sort of like, oh, you know, the AI tripped and they started, you know, sucking everyone else, but I had enough time to get a suit on. Oh, you had enough time to get a suit on. You're the only, and wherever you were happened to have a suit. Okay, whatever, I'll buy it.
Right,
but, you know.
And I'm sure that suit provided just enough life support to keep him going for however long it was going to take Michael to come out and find him. Sorry, I didn't buy this for a second. I knew he was going to be the foil. And I was just screaming at Burnham the whole time, pretty much cussing her out, like, just don't do this. And so thank goodness Spock was there to save the day, because otherwise this was way too easy.
Yes. Dan, what'd you think of Spock in this episode?
I will say I liked the little quip about the magnetizing the floor. I liked that. Yeah. I thought that was a clever little bit. I really did like that. And how does control work? If your ship is infected, where did the... Okay, that's fine. Let's grant...
We're all shrugging, listeners.
Yeah. Let's grant that the ship was infected. By the way, ship number 62, because we don't have ship names, we just have ship numbers, which is the dumbest thing in Section 31, but whatever. Okay, so there's got to be an agent of the control to take over Gant's body. There has to be nanobots or something. There's got to be something there.
Does there?
Yes. How?
Now, Daniel, and Char, I know, is the expert here. I don't mean to just talk for her. You know, the Borg Queen, sometimes she seems like she's not there, but then when you do a movie a couple years later, she was there the whole time.
You always forget to pan a little bit to the left.
Yeah.
Right, and there's her floating head and her neck, her spine. She is the one who has many.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, a lot of this doesn't make sense, but where did they come from? I don't know how they got there. Presumably, Leland is out there, still alive, right? Question mark?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Leland's not dead.
Well, the Section 31 ship is, you know, Scarper.
Well, he was down on the planet, and they fired on it, but then the next thing we hear is the Section 31 ship is leaving.
We detected a transporter beam.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure they beamed him up and then ejected Ash Tyler and then zipped off.
I think Ash Tyler ejected himself, but yeah.
That's what I thought, too.
This ship is infected.
Right.
They blow everybody out of the airlocks.
Like you do.
Sure, why not?
At some point, something has to either bring Gant back in or infect him while he's in space.
Right.
Well, I thought he was infected before he got launched out.
Actually, I, in my head, and again, it's because none of it makes sense, but I just sort of, in my watching, I was like, I assumed he was already ejected, and they were like, oh, wait, forgot, boom, infect that guy.
I would almost think that he was infected and trying to take over, and some sort of emergency protocol tripped that killed everybody, but that was like... the failsafe.
I'm not saying it's a good failsafe. It's not a great emergency protocol. Eject crew. Maybe we should, where is that in order of priority? Have we tried reversing the polarity first?
But even logistically, like, there's all sorts of problems. Okay, we're kind of used to that now. Yeah. My bigger problem is with the motivation of control, because it then again becomes... how the entire universe revolves around Michael Burnham. Spock has this whole speech where he's like, you're the only thing he can't account for. You're the most important thing. You're the only thing that can defeat control. And it's like, oh my God, why can Michael Burnham do anything? She doesn't.
You're out of control, Michael. You're off the case. Turn in your badge and gun.
Yeah, that has been a conflicting message where, like, they're trying to keep her grounded. It's not all about you, Michael, but then it is all about her.
Yeah. Every time.
Every time. So, yeah, what are we getting at here?
She's just so wild and unpredictable, except I think I can predict that she'll take the most dangerous and emotional choice. Because I was yelling at her too, Char, but at the beginning of the episode... where it's like,
okay,
don't you think you're emotional? No, I'm 100% logical in how I'm approaching. Because it seems like you're not thinking clearly. I'm like, no, I'll go alone. Really? And Spock's like, no, I'll go. No, I don't need anyone. I feel like you probably do. You know, and I'm actually fed up with Michael at this point. I mean, like, she's not captain material. And I'm sorry that's harsh, but she's not captain material. She does not make good decisions. I mean, you can argue she's emotionally compromised, and that's fine, but she's emotionally compromised then. I mean, let's be honest. So she's just not making very Starfleet decisions.
Now, I have a question. We have a whole episode in Deep Space Nine about why you should not send husband and wife onto a mission together.
It takes us 200 years to learn, or 100 years to learn. Go ahead.
So presumably there must be something similar for siblings as well, right? You wouldn't want to send two siblings on a mission together. Especially,
well, technically Spock's off duty right now, so
yeah, this is volunteer. He's just volunteering his time, giving to the community. Yeah.
Look, Spock is expressing multiple opinions and attitudes at this time. To which are you referring?
He truly is. What do you guys think of Spock and Burnham's relationship at this point? How are you feeling about it?
It's nice that Spock's no longer like catatonic, and
that's a plus.
We're kind of past the whole did he kill people? I mean, that was last week's problem. This week's problem. No, it's interesting. Again, so I did enjoy the book. I can't remember the title, but it's the first of the Discovery books, and there's a whole mission that Spock and Burnham are on together.
Desperate Hours.
It's really interesting. I think it's Desperate Hours. Yeah, the titles are all kind of similar for the first few, but I enjoyed it, and I would have liked to see that more. But I guess it's just, again, there's so much that we have to pack in to this season, because I don't know. I guess we just gotta, you know, that there's no time to have these interpersonal episodes. We get interpersonal scenes. And yeah. Then we're off to the next thing.
I mean, he's very sweet in his own way, but not even in his own way. I mean, even really, he's very sweet to her now.
He cares about her, you can tell.
Yeah, but yeah. Is that Spock, though? I mean, and I'm not... And I'm going to... And I don't know, how do you want to play this game, right? TOS Spock is what I'm talking about. And of course, you could say, well, whatever, we're doing new things, get over it, Phil. And that's fine, I'll accept that. But TOS Spock, I mean, the way he treats Sarek... in Babel, or whatever it's called. Very, like...
Journey to Babel.
Yeah, Journey to Babel, sorry. I know that's a Deep Space Nine episode. But Journey to Babel is very, like, cold. Even his mother, he's very distant in that episode. Now, you know, you can say, like, well, things happen in the next 5 years. Okay, fine, but he's just very... He's being very human right now, as opposed to being very Vulcan later.
Do you suppose that's some of Burnham's... influence on him? Is he's around a very emotional and reactive human, and they're spending a lot more time together, and seems like they have buried the hatchet a little bit. Like, they aired their dirty laundry, they had their complaints and their grievances, and
buried
then
the,
now
Lurpa.
They really seem to be coming together
anyway. But and I could see them having a poignant moment at the end of the season where, you know, he talks about kind of how he's grown and he's glad that their relationship is better. And he's going to apply that, you know, into his focus as, you know, and being a Starfleet officer. And then we see him off into, you know, the Enterprise. You know, sure. I'm fine with that.
Except he's not when he gets to it. But anyway, that's it.
right. Well, and yeah, that's just
the last scene,
like, this incarnation
he's gonna
of
peel
Spock.
Off the sideburns. And it'll be just the goatee.
Will he shave in the
last
scene?
Spock the whole time.
No.
The mirror universe has not left us. And Georgiou was in on it the whole time.
And like in every little brother, he tattled to mom at the beginning. So I thought that was nice. Yeah.
You know, speaking of which, I really enjoyed that moment because we had Mom Burnham talking to Georgiou about Burnham saying, hey, protect our baby. You love her. I love her too. Make sure she's okay. Well, what about the woman who actually raised her? Okay, so it was nice to see her, and it was nice to see her interacting with both Burnham and Spock at the same time. I love you both. She's such a good mom.
Yeah.
I love her. I want her to be my mom.
Yeah, and that was cool. It's like, you know, and it very much felt like a, oh, you're on phone with mom. Hey, mom. How's it going? I mean, that was basically what it was like.
They're FaceTiming with mom.
Yeah, it's always, hey, Mom, how's it going? Oh, I'm so glad you two are together right now, having a space adventures.
The only thing that
your father says hello, you know.
The only thing that would have been better is if she had to go. It wasn't them, Spock and Burnham, that had to leave. She had to leave because Cybok was calling on the other line.
Your other brother, no. Cybok's calling.
Oh, man.
Or I have to go make dinner for Sarek.
Right,
see you later.
Yeah. Sarek, could you get that?
Yeah. No, like a thing pops up on the hologram that's like, incoming call. Would you like to transfer, hold, or accept call?
She just presses ignore. Anyway.
Yeah,
and it's like, S, it's like S.
Hashtag not my kid. You know, so.
It's right? Like 3-1-SBK, and all the nerd fans are like, oh my lord, what could that be?
No, I like Cyberbach, you know, pops up and all three of them just go like,
Hey, Cybok. Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you feeling, everyone? We're doing good, Cybok.
Guys, let me share my pain with you this week. I submitted a book
to this online
magazine company.
Hey, guys, I'm starting a cult. You want to hear about
it? I'm going through an Ion Storm.
They rejected my manuscript, guys. Feel my pain. Feel my pain.
Let's share it.
I've written a poem. Oh, God.
Was
guys, I found
kid?
This space horse yes. on this other planet. It's totally like a horse, but it's not because it's on this other planet.
Isn't his mom like a princess or something? Anyway. Oh, well. So,
nobody cares about Cybok.
Yeah, well. Oh, they have royalty on Vulcan. There's just a whole bunch of things to go there. There's something for Punch It, darling, or for you know.
We don't have time to talk about that, Phil. We are busy following
the Cybok backstory, Charlene. That's what we need. The Discovery short trek featuring Cybok. That's what I want.
Okay, I'll jot that down. We'll put it in the idea bank.
That's right. So, Daniel, anything else?
Episode title, Feel Our Pain.
That's right. This episode wasn't that bad. Daniel, what did you think of any final thoughts about Section 31 control and where we're heading?
Just, oh, God, please don't be the Borg. Just don't. Just please just leave it be. I mean, the bots are green, and it just makes me nervous, and I hate it, and I just don't want to go there. Just don't do it. Just don't do it.
And, I mean, we'll go ahead, I guess we'll save the ending for the end.
I mean, I'd rather it go more towards the routes of, like, Ultimate Computer or Memory Alpha, or it could be many other things besides the Borg. The Borg almost feels like the cheap out. There's so many other interesting, there's the computer that controlled the asteroid, was it, like, Yolanda?
I mean,
there's all sorts of cool AI in TOS era that we could tie this into, even if we don't even need to tie into anything, but if we did, there's lots of options. But the Borg,
so what happens is it's not the Borg as we know it, but at the end of either the series or whatever, they're going to time crystal control back in time into the Delta Quadrant, and you know, etc.
I still have people in some of the online threads I read, as people are discussing the episode, I need to rewatch Calypso because apparently everyone's like hung up that it's going to be like super integral coming up. So,
well, that's
my theory.
We can do that for a second here because it's not, per se. And I was thinking about, we can talk about the ending, I guess, in after we talk a story. But I was thinking about, like, again, we have a season 3. So, assumingly, they're not going to blow, be discoveryless in season 3 or else.
Unless we all shift over on the Enterprise for the rest of the show.
Well, you have to rename the show, I think. But we do know the Discovery is just hanging out in the middle of Nowheresville forever. So maybe it just has the sphere plans, but it's hidden away because that's where it is. But anyway.
It's a copy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, of the Discovery.
Who knows? So, all right, let's talk a story. Captain Pike and time.
Torpedoes are
crystal. We can't even do that in the 23rd century. So, I don't know. We'll just start Captain Pike, Klingons from the future past, time crystals. Beep, beep. What do you got for me?
Beep, beep. Yeah, so we already talked about the rapid aging of Thorel and Vok's son. I mean, it makes enough sense to me. Rapid aging in a Klingon childhood plus time crystals equals an adult Klingon in the prime of his life. I mean, time crystals are amazing things, and that'll never change him.
Now, are you giving your kids time crystals, or are you going organic?
No, but I am giving them tunnel vision crowns because that makes it all the better.
Now, Char and Darren, my wife Jessica, did ask when the Klingon appeared. She's like, "Oh, is that one of those Delenn Klingons?" I'm like, "Oh, is that are you asking? Is that a Minbari Klingon?" Oh.
I see it.
I did not see that.
You know, he's very religious cast in a way. He's very,
Well, yeah, he's kind of got this sacred thing going on. That's true. Real quick, before we get into Pike, I want to talk a little bit just about Laurel and Tyler. I was really glad to see that the situation brought them back together. I mean, it seems like this has really helped them clear the air between these two, and they're in a good place. And that's kind of nice because a lot of our characters are not. Now, that doesn't mean their story's complete. They still have, I mean, they've got their son. They've both agreed to look out for him. So there's potential there. But it's kind of nice to see something resolved and not in a massive whiplash fashion on Discovery. So there was that. Now, to Pike, I just really want to jump to the moment. The gut punch moment, sealing his fate, knowing what's going to happen. We've always known beep beep, but how we got there was way more powerful than beep beep itself. Oh my gosh.
I believe that's what Neil Armstrong said on the moon.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. One small beep beep, one
giant leap for beep beep beep.
Beep. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm putting myself in Pike's shoes, despite the warnings of madness, despite the sealing of his fate, and Pike doing what he must to get the time crystals is so ballsy. I mean, wow. That's amazing. The way he centers himself with the self-talk about what truly matters to him, it's damn heroic, so pure. Just when I thought I couldn't love this guy anymore, that happened, and it was a gut punch to the heart, but it was warming at the same time because it reaffirms every belief I've had about Pike. I don't know about you guys. And the way that he looks, you can tell he's so haunted with this knowledge afterward. It makes me feel really kind of sad for him, and he's doing his best to deal with it, but how well would any of us cope with something like that? Probably not very well, which is why Ash and Laurel's son says, hey, look, these things cause a lot of madness, knowing your fate. Do tread carefully. Pike is maybe one of the very few people who actually can maybe handle this. And I feel like they nailed this moment. Serious props to Anson Mount, to the writers. This might be one of Discovery's finest moments. I'm going to pin it that high.
I mean, I like the production of it. Like, when he's the makeup and the beep beep chair, I mean, that's what, I don't even know who the actor was because it wasn't Jeff Hunt because he had died by then. But anyway, whoever was in the menagerie, that look, they nailed it. I mean, a lot of times they don't nail it, but they nailed that look. I mean, I don't know why his face was melting, but that's fine. Whatever, I'll go with it.
To torture Pike.
Well, and it's interesting how it's not like they just cut to him in the chair. Mm-hmm. They also had shots of the explosion and the engine compartment, and he's trying to get everyone out, and
now,
obviously
Darren,
he's exposed to some radiation.
I was thinking of you, because you make it so I can't enjoy anything anymore. Where was that scene shot, Darren?
You know, it looked like the Discovery engine room.
Really?
It looked like it to me.
Okay.
The brewery. Wait.
I mean, was a Starfleet Academy training simulation, Darren. Several years from now, are you telling me it looks like... Okay, never mind.
But no. And then apparently we're on the bridge of the Enterprise for a moment, too, which looks...
In the teaser, too, so...
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's the teaser I'm thinking of. Yeah. But but we see that, which had a lot of parallels to Spock and Star Trek 2, you know, where Spock also sacrifices himself and is dosed with radiation and dies. But yeah, with Pike. And again, you know, hats off to our actors because he really nailed, like we're saying, you know, I mean, man is not meant to totally know his future. I don't think we could even handle that. You know,
right. That's why we don't.
That's why we don't, yeah. And to see, it's like to see your own face in the mirror, but it's not you. And to see this, and it wasn't just like this vision, you know, but he's also feeling like he's standing right in front of himself. And I like the updated beep beep chair was well done. You know, it's still, you knew exactly what it was, but it wasn't like a black with a white single dot in the middle. You know,
it didn't look like a cardboard box.
No.
Yeah.
It
felt more like a life support because you had like the breathing sound in the background and stuff like that. Where I knew it was life support in the menagerie, but it really came across like that in this episode.
Yes, he becomes Vader.
Agreed.
Never would have expected it. I enjoyed it. I mean, the only thing, Char, I agree is it's a powerful moment. It happened so fast, it was hard for me to get really buy it. Like, I get what he's doing. You know, Pike is reacting to this vision, and so he's holding on. He literally almost holds on to his insignia on his chest about what Starfleet is. Though, when he's listing the things, I'm with him. Then he says, like, because he says it really fast, because he's obviously in an excited state, but, you know, like, you know, sacrifice. And he's like, love. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know. That's really one of the key components of Starfleet. But, I mean, if you're just talking about good qualities, I guess, you know, we're not exactly, you know, all rainbows and unicorns. But I get what you're going for. But then I guess the thought is, and now that he knows his future, because then, and I don't know the Klingon's name, but he says, you know, once you do this, you can't change it. And I'm like, well, what bullshit's that? I mean, why does breaking a crystal make a fixed point in time? So if I don't touch the crystal, I'm not going to, you know, well, that's, anyway. It just seems weird. But anyway, put that aside. But, like, so now that he knows his future, I almost wonder, like, and of course we'll never see it, but when it comes to that time, is there a pause where he's like, oh, if I save that cadet, and then you have to have that, you have to show that of, like, well, I you know, he's going to do it. But, you know, he has to have that thought of he knows now what he's going to happen when he does that versus when he's just acting on instinct the first time.
Well, I think when you're in a situation that's a crisis, you're not thinking, you're just doing.
But
so
now
by the time he comes to realize that that is the moment, too late.
Yeah. When he sees that explosion on the Discovery engine, I mean, in the Starfleet Academy training simulation or whatever it is, but.
I'm actually reading. I'm just reading right now that supposedly the ship that they're on is a Class J starship, and it's like a training vessel, and that's where Captain Pike had the. But this, I think, was described in like the Menagerie,
yeah.
But then also verified in.
What class? I forget what class is Discovery again. Something weird.
Crossfield class?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. I thought it was maybe a class. It started with a
C. Why did I know that?
I don't know why. They never maybe it's the Starship Crossfield or something. Anyway, go ahead. But Daniel, you're going to say something.
Well, yeah. So the moment itself, I liked his sort of kind of building himself up there to hype himself there. Everything around it, the context made no sense for me. And this is the thing, and this is the worry that I had with Discovery, was they're just prequelizing too much. I kind of like when random stuff happens, when space is dangerous and it's not some part of some galactic intricate timeline, like when Yar died in some random episode with some stupid, you know, gas alien thing. And it's like when something just happens,
they attacked Saru's planet, Daniel. I think she should show some respect. Sorry.
Or, you know, like, I don't know. It bothers me that we need to contextualize what we know is already going to happen for no reason. This just doesn't do anything. I just feel like this is just a callback to callback. And it doesn't,
really?
To me, it doesn't add anything to Pike. I'd rather him be a heroic person in a moment of crisis, where he doesn't have any foreknowledge of what's about to happen. It feels like it takes away from it. It doesn't add anything. I don't know why he needs to know this. And
is it a self-destination paradox?
And another part of the problem is because we don't understand the rules about time crystals or anything, because they don't lay them out clearly. His fate, because this is supposed to show him his fate is actually much, much more pleasant than this. This is just a bad thing that happens to him on the road. This is like, you know, this is what happens to lead to it. But he actually gets a pretty fantastic send-off. Like, you know, his actual fate is that he gets to live in paradise until you know, oblivion or whatever. So it's like, it's not even effective prequelizing. It's not effective adding anything that makes any sort of sense. It's just like, hey, you know the thing that's going to happen to this guy. We also know the thing that's going to happen to this guy, and now we're going to tell you why the thing's going to happen to this guy. Where I like it better, where it's just a thing that happens, and it's not tied into this entire thing, and it doesn't, you're not adding anything, is like, I guess my point.
Now, does the time crystal, is it a way of self-preservation, you know, like any kind of animal or plant has a defense mechanism? Does it only show you the worst thing in your past, and then that way you won't break it off and take it?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Because if it showed, yeah, you get made young again and go with Vina or whatever her name is that you're hot for school about, You know, then you'd be like, oh, shoot, let me break a couple of these out. You know.
I mean, it's true. Pike does come out okay in the end. So how bad for him can we feel really knowing that outcome?
Well, and also remember, for the viewers that have not seen TOS, I mean, they don't know any of the foreshadowed of Pike. So, yes, for us, you know, the veterans who know the menagerie and things like that, we know that what that means. But they also have to present this in a way where, oh, my gosh, Pike, in the future, something bad happens to him, and he's, like, stuck in a wheelchair and all jacked up. Like, that's all they know is what they've been shown in this episode.
That's such a good point, Darren. You're right. It's not necessarily, I mean, it is a bit for us because we know the history, right. Like it can hit us on an emotional level, but for people who have no idea of that context, this is, I think, a big point for that audience to feel things for Pike in a completely different way. And it works on both levels.
I mean, it's like, imagine like the Tapestry like episode with Picard, and he sees a future where he's going to be assimilated by the Borg or something like that. I mean, I know the timeline is a little different of like when that episode happened, but for us watching it, we're like, oh my gosh, Captain Picard, who we idolize, made this choice knowing of what his future was going to be and the scars it was going to give him. Same thing. They're just doing that now for Captain Pike, for that character. I mean, I think we can all universally say we like the Pike character. And
oh yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not denying what you're saying, Daniel, of why do we need to tie it in with TOS and all these little, like, you know, it's like, let's fill in these gaps that weren't asked to fill in, but we're kind of already here in that time.
Time.
So
right, like,
there's not much else
here
to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
like, yeah,
but
I
look at it more as, you know, people really like Pike and who don't even know, you know, who didn't watch The Cage. Also, think about it, that they only gave us that little intro loop in that one episode about the cage, and that was it. So they have it, you know, and that, which I'm assuming is that they felt, we need to share this for you to get the full context of what is happening in this episode.
Right.
Because they haven't done that in every episode.
And maybe the hope is, though, is that people who are watching Discovery as new viewers go back and watch the TOS episodes, The Cage and The Menagerie.
On CBS All Access, you can subscribe for $11.99 every month.
There you go. So, I mean, hey, if that's a part of the intent, so be it. I don't really care.
I was going to say, again, and maybe I missed it, and that's always a possibility, so... A lot of time, so I think, was it the other episode, last episode, you know, because it just runs together, where I'm just, they give me a premise at the beginning of the episode, and then expect me to watch the whole episode. Instead, I'm yelling at them the whole episode because the premise doesn't make sense. So here's my question. They want a time crystal. What are they going to do with it? Because I was asking my wife about 10 minutes in, like, hold on. I think I literally paused it, because, you know, so what's the plan? They're going to get a time crystal, and then attach Data to it? And then,
I don't know.
Magic wand, and it goes into. I mean, what are they using for an apparatus? Like, they don't have a suit. Like, what are they going to do with the time crystal?
There's a line in the there's a line in the episode, and Pike gets back on Discovery. He's talking. He's back in the ready room with Laurel and Ash, and they go, "Well, now that you have the time crystal, what are you going to do, Captain?" He goes, "I don't know, man. I guess we'll figure it out when we get the other three signals. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. He literally says there's three more signals. I'm sure the answer will present itself to us.
He said, I trust
basically.
The writers.
So it's like, okay, the writers don't know. There's
guys, the writers are the red angel of the signals.
They're sending the signals.
It makes so much sense. Is Pike becoming the Deadpool character where he sees through the fourth wall to our universe?
Yeah, it's like the premise of, like, we need to capture the red angel. I'm like, why? And then this is, we need to get a crystal. Why? What are you going to do with it? Or, I mean, why don't you get the Klingons to do something? They apparently know how to use them.
But do they okay, do we want to get into this, because I really just nothing
no,
about
let's ignore the episode, Daniel. Thank you, it's been a great time, guys.
I'm just saying, like, what the hell, like, what is
going
what
on
is Boris? Even is what is this planet? What is going on? There's just trees growing out of the
ground. I am the guardian of forever, Kolschbach Feschrukumbach.
No, look, this is the pillar of the past, Daniel. And if you take 10 steps forward, the penitent man will pass. And then this is the pillar
of the present. Of By the way, I know what the third one is. You don't have to tell me.
I've seen. Yeah. What?
Of the thou shalt not be. Oh, you got me.
What
you
is
got me.
What? I mean, there's no explanation. There's no reasoning behind it. There's no sort of. And we just glossed over it, and now there's just they're just crystals that grow out of the ground. They're not even doing anything to them. They're not like plugging them into the computer and putting a date into them. They're not like they're not like smacking them with a stick. They just do things. They just do things.
You touch it once, Daniel. It's like a like this touch lamp I have right here. So you touch it once, you get a vision, and then if you accept the vision, you have to press yes to the terms, conditions, and agreement. You can then accept,
which you don't read.
You can then touch it again, and nothing will happen. So if you give the crystal to someone else, they have to wear gloves? I don't know is the answer. I don't know.
It's totally murky. It occurs to me that the Klingons don't really mess with these time crystals too much. At least that's the vibe that I got. They're considered sacred.
Unless you're a baby and you use it as a pacifier, and then you...
But he was meant to be on Boreth. He was meant to be the guardian of the time crystals. So be it. We all have a destiny.
Yeah. I still think my theory is valid that Michael is the Red Angel, and she is the one that creates the reds. The
seven signals.
She creates the signals. She eventually gets the time suit and then fixes it with the time crystal we just got. And because all the times that the mom was like, "Oh, I didn't know about this and this and this and this."
Yes, theorizing that one could time travel within her own time, Michael Burnham stepped into the Red Angel suit and vanished.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense, Darren, since we did get that knowledge that Michael's mom had nothing to do with the seven signals. So then it's like, okay, well, what the heck is going on with these things?
Right.
And remember, Spock knows about them. Spock had a vision
or
about the seven signals.
Maybe the time crystal creates the signals. They don't actually travel through time. They just use it to create the signals.
Ooh.
I don't know, guys. We got two episodes left.
We don't know. But
explain
you know what?
Everything.
I'm here for whatever the time crystals do, because I do feel like we are jumping into Calypso territory. We mentioned it a while back, but I feel like that's why we got this short trek and we're headed into that territory, and I'm here for it. I'm excited. I think maybe we're finally going to get some answers about all of this crap.
All right, well, let's
feel like we had a very similar sentiment towards the end of last season.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh man, everything about the spore drive will be answered. We'll totally understand it within context. And once we get the whole, and the Klingon War will all make sense. And then everything just wrapped up in
and
like
And then it was like, hey
seconds.
Guys, it's been 9 months and we don't have to care about the war anymore. And the spore drive is broken.
Yeah. So I just, I feel like
By the way, can I have the short trek that explains why Stamets can use the spore drive no problem now? No? Okay. We haven't done that. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I was surprised that too, where like they spore drive dropped in. I'm like, so it was broken.
Well, it used to be driving him crazy, but he's fine now. So,
speaking of the spore drive, Philip, do we want to talk about the end of the episode?
Okay, so the end of the episode. Oh boy. So Daniel, are you trying to say that when you're surrounded by a bunch of Section 31 ships, you just press the button and disappear?
When you have the ability to go anywhere in the galaxy, you literally can leave and go wherever you want.
But Daniel, we don't have time to know where we're going.
You can go anywhere. In fact, to even suggest that the only option you have is to destroy the ship that you're on is madness. It's tantamount to madness. You have the only ship that
but
can
Daniel,
go anywhere.
But Daniel, they'll never stop hunting them.
Yes.
Thus, there's no reason to actually try to get away.
Daniel just never stops. The stakes have never been higher.
What's amazing is if you go somewhere and then all the people follow you to the there, you can also go to the other there where it'll probably take some time to get to the there too.
So just go beta, gamma, beta, gamma, beta, gamma.
And then throw a delta.
Like, son of a.
But then let's assume that this is some sort of weird proto-Borg. How many other things get assimilated along the way? Maybe they're trying to do damage control. I just want to put that
What if
out
they
there.
Just spore drive beyond the Great Barrier? Nobody can get you there now. Woo!
Ooh. And then they all become gods. And it all works out.
What does God need with a spore drive?
Oh, episode title. All right, so...
God, did you order this pizza with pepperoni and mushroom?
Hey!
So apparently, the only solution is not only to blow up Discovery, which I suggested 3 episodes ago, thank you, but we have to transfer everyone to another ship called the Enterprise.
And number one's gonna be back. It's about freaking time.
And Pike's gonna put his uniform back on real fast.
Thank God. So we know. Well, we've all been itching, let's be honest. These Discoveries suits a chafe. Char, you already tweeted. What's our next episode title next week?
It is called Sweet Sorrow, or Parting is Such Sweet Sorrow.
Yes.
It is called Such Sweet Sorrow.
Yes. Thank you. I so totally butchered that, but
that's right.
The context. And boy, that's loaded, isn't it?
And I'm not one of the sealers who's going to go crazy about this stuff, but you know, we did get a glimpse of the Enterprise Bridge, and my 5-second glimpse, I didn't pause or anything. It looked fine. You know, I would worry, but I'm not going to kill myself if it looks weird, but I'd rather it not look weird. But it looked, you know, I saw red. I saw a thing. It looked fine. So
there's the chairs that look accurate. I mean, I think they're going to do a decent enough job. I do feel like next episode is going to be Pike's farewell to us, and that makes me sad.
I will remember you.
But if it gives us acting Captain Saru for a few episodes.
He's a badass now.
Can we just remove the acting part of it?
Yes.
Can we just make him captain already?
He's
so ready.
Sorry, we only do acting.
What? No, they'll make him captain for the last 3 minutes before the self-destruct.
Oh, no.
Is that how we're going to end the... Is that
Saru?
Oh.
He's like, Captain, someone's got to go down with the ship. Well, Saru, you're no longer acting captain.
Oh, man, it's a good thing those threat ganglia are gone.
If this series ends with Michael and Discovery with the self-destruct, and there's an explosion and credits roll, I will throw things at the TV.
Number one, fire.
That's right.
Yeah, I was just thinking. Mr. Saru, detonate.
That's right.
I don't know. We will see. I think it's maybe going to be a little more of a situation where they find themselves flung in the future.
Again?
And then it's like, whoa, okay, now what? Da, 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 amidst some other crisis that we
don't
know.
Oh, so you're saying the only spore ship theoretically in existence is flown forward in time, and so that's why there is no spore drive in the 23rd century, because it's gone.
And
Michael's,
maybe they never figured out why, and so they think, okay,
and Michael's
too dangerous,
gone,
back off.
So no one talks about her anymore. So
right,
that season three is when was Calypso?
It's a good thing.
900 years
thing
in the future.
Pike and Spock got off, because otherwise,
exactly,
they would.
Exactly. So we can get that spin-off show that everybody's talking about.
That's right. So yeah.
So wait. So are we saying that it's going to shift full on Voyager, and the whole season's about getting back to 22nd?
Except they're stuck in time.
Only
not
it
stuck
doesn't.
In, yeah.
That's going to be the twist, and the damnation is probably going to be satisfying in some weird way.
Yeah, there's going to be this episode in season three where they have to abandon the Discovery and they all go to a planet, and then Calypso takes place in that episode, and then they find a way back to Discovery, and they're like, hey, who's been moving all our shit around? Oh, well, I know. So,
then the Enterprise J swoops in, and they're like,
oh,
whoa, look at that show.
At that point, I think it's the Enterprise ZZ, but, you know.
Or maybe, I don't know, Captain Braxton is what I'm going for. He's going to correct it somewhat.
That's right.
Because he's a little stressed about what Janeway
does. Oh, man, if
they
could, de-age that actor and make it totally look like he did in the 90s.
Or they could just recast him for the third time, but, you know, whatever.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? My final thoughts really are that my biggest, concern at this point with the scarce couple of episodes left is that it is going to be rushed, and it isn't going to be satisfying just like the end of season one. And no, I really, really don't want that, because the story they're telling is good, but dang if we're not moving at warp speed.
Yeah.
Spore speed.
Sorry. Right. I stand corrected.
Yeah, with the mushroom crystals that they use.
Mushroom crystals. That's what's going to happen, is the spore drive is going to merge with the time crystals, and then we've got a real big problem on our hands.
If
that
you
duct
can go anywhere in
fix.
Space and time, but
well, look,
unreliable,
Control
I'd watch that series.
Has a glove, and it's got to put all 6 crystals in the glove.
Okay. Well, I think that's more than enough. So, Char, where can we find you on the interwebs?
Well, the best place is to find me on Twitter, and my handle is OhTheProfanity. In the ether, you can hear me talk even more about Star Trek with Tristan Riddell here on the Nerd Party Network. We do Punch It, writing in Star Trek. So if you can't get enough Star Trek, hit us up and explore what ifs as we plot things that maybe could have happened, should have happened, or whatever. We just make it all up. It's fun. And I also do a video podcast with my husband, Patrick, and we're watching Babylon 5. He's watching it for the very first time, and so we watch an episode, get a reaction, cut it down to 5 minutes, and it's a babble for five.
Awesome. Daniel, if people want to talk to you about your crystal collection, where can they find you?
You know, Shar, just because you brought it up, these guys made me watch a Babylon 5 episode not too long ago.
Whoa, and you did?
I did.
What did you think?
It was okay.
Which one did you watch?
Now, it wasn't the best choice. We'll talk about that later.
Okay, we can talk podcast, but I want to know more. I want to know about this.
Okay. So you can find me, and including my reactions to that one Babylon 5 episode I've ever seen, on Twitter, @OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
All right, Darren, if people want to know about how your two adult children are doing, where can they find you?
Yes, they can find me on Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi, also getting into the Timex Corporation. So, you know, it's going to be interesting.
All right. And if folks want to talk to me about how me and my wife are dealing with our second anniversary, oh, man. Oh, boy. I tell you what. They can find me on Twitter @NCPublicServant or listen to us talk Doctor Who on Time and Space. Well, guys, as we said, next week we'll be talking about our first Shakespearean title of Star Trek Discovery. So until then, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Brew.
I'm Darren Moser.
And I am definitely Jet Reno.
Stranded here in time on City Alpha 3.